Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm good. It's been a busy holiday.
Yes.
But
we're wrapping up.
We're wrapping up, quickly approaching the time in which I have to go back to work.
No.
No. Oh, well. How are you?
I'm well. We've been wanting to do this movie for a while, and
yes, we watched it a while ago.
Yeah, I watched it again last night, kind of. I was in and out, because it's really not good.
No. No, that's, yeah, I would describe it as bad, even.
But yeah, so my birthday was yesterday,
Woo!
And so I have officially entered my quarter life.
Man.
Which is wild.
Oh, that's assuming you live to 100.
Yeah, which is not going to happen, as we know.
Yeah. you're more than a quarter through your life.
Wow. That's really beautiful.
Really makes you think.
You know, I just think towards the end, I'm just going to be like, when will this be over?
That's what my grandma was like. As we all know, my Nana died at 100.
Mm-hmm.
But around the time she was about 92, she started just being like, she told me she prays to God every night to take her.
So she still had 8 years.
She still had 8 years of unwillful living.
Oof, that's rough.
And God said, not yet.
Not yet, I guess.
Not yet, bitch.
You gotta keep holding on.
When she died, it was, like, kind of hard to be sad because I was like...
She really wanted
she
it.
She wanted it so bad, and she finally got it. I'm happy for her.
Honestly, I really want to get to that point where you're like, well, I'm happy for her.
Yeah, she it's really like, wanted it's not to die. Sad. It's good. It's good. She wanted to be dead, and she is dead now. That's nice.
As we go into this movie talking about suicide.
Content warning.
Well, she wanted to be dead. Now
it's not. My Nana didn't kill herself, though. She said, no, that's not my decision to make.
And, but she really tried to influence God.
She tried to speed it up. She tried to expedite the process, but it did not work. In fact, so far, she's the oldest person on my family that's ever existed. So, she was not going to get what she wanted there.
Aww.
But, you know, here, this movie, yeah, there's some suicide. If you didn't know from the trailers.
Yeah, right. And we'll talk about it as we get deeper into it. I guess this was originally a short film.
It feels like it could have been a short film.
And this chick, I'm not sure who this is, but she played the lead, I guess, in the short film. She played the same character in the short film.
She didn't get the big film, huh?
Yeah.
Mm. That's, you know, how bad do you have to be to lose to the girl that ended up getting this part? Because she was not good. She looked like she was on meth, quite frankly.
Listen, I did not like the acting in this.
No.
The boyfriends are insane.
Also, I can't even begin to delve into the love story that's happening. Why is it happening? It does not need to be there at all. It adds zero to the plot. There's no tension. I don't care about either of these people. This lady looks like a meth addict.
There was a strong positive test screening. Smile received mostly positive reviews from critics who praised the visuals, themes, cinematography, and Bacon's performance.
What? Bacon?
Bacon, I think that's the actress.
Is this woman related to...
Kevin Bacon?
She kind of has the same nose.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I guess we'll see. So, Sozie Bacon... Oh my god, her dad is Kevin Bacon!
Oh my god, Nepo baby.
And Kira Sedgwick!
Nepo baby, uncovered. Now we know why she got it. She was so bad, and she has the nose. That's exactly, I was like, she's gotta be related. Like, they
with the nose.
Both have that nose, and they're both named Bacon. Come on.
Wow, Nepo baby.
A Nepo baby.
Wow.
And this is the best she could do. That just goes. That's exactly what the cultural conversation's all about here. Yes. This lady should not have had this role.
Yeah, but criticized some of its jump scares and noted similarities to other films like It Follows and The Ring.
And We took shots from The Shining. We
oh my god! From that. There are so many shots in this that I'm just like, that's just another horror movie. The Kubrick stare. It's just all Kubrick stare.
We stole the Kubrick stare. We stole the upside down windy road shot.
Yes.
We stole the music from we had some of the Exorcist stuff happening.
Ugh.
We have, of course, the entire plot is it follows. We completely stole the entire plot.
But less sexy.
Yeah, but worse.
Worse and less sexy.
Sort of like if you wanted to watch It Follows, but you wanted to watch a bad version that came 10 years later.
Mm-hmm, and didn't have any hot sex in it.
No. Or good acting.
Or it was a box office success, grossing $216 million worldwide against a $17 million budget.
And this is when I tell you, if any of you are aspiring filmmakers out there, I highly suggest you break into the horror market first. This seems
the bar is so low.
This seems to be the place. You think about, okay, as you know, anyone that listens to this podcast knows that we love Ari Aster.
Mm,
absolute fave. This man had done nothing before Hereditary. His very next movie.
And now he's 2 for 2, and he has Joaquin Phoenix in his third one.
These very next movies, he's breaking out superstars.
Yeah.
And it's he made one horror short film that they were like, now that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then they were like, big budget movie with Toni Collette.
Yep.
And I just think that you think about James Wan.
Mm, yes.
A man who's not good at making movies at all. And he's made 40 films at this point.
Yeah. You can really break into the horror genre because people just will eat trash.
People are desperate for semi-good horror. They're literally banging down the door for semi-good horror. This is definitely the genre to break into.
Absolutely. All right. So this movie is obviously from 2022. The plot. At a psychiatric ward, therapist Dr. Rose Cotter meets with Laura Weaver, a graduate student who witnessed her art history professor die by suicide several days earlier.
We jump right the fuck in.
Yeah.
There's no lead up. It's immediately just like, hey, I'm a good person because I'm a therapist. And it's really obvious that I'm a good person because we're going to have this therapy session, which basically is going to tell you everything you need to know about how this monster operates and works in the first 5 minutes.
Yes.
And then I'm going to go have an argument about insurance because I'm on the hospital side.
I'm a good person. Also, it also begins with her mom being dead, right?
I forgot about that. They're
I think it comes in with her mom's dead body, but we don't know it's her mom's dead body at that point yet.
Yeah, we're immediately okay. Mom's dead, good person therapist who believes that we shouldn't have to have insurance.
Which I agree with, but this is just such lazy.
It's such lazy character development.
Yeah. Yeah. Laura claims that an entity taking the form of smiling people has been terrorizing her and has told her that she is going to die. Soon thereafter, Laura stumbles to the floor and begins screaming. After Rose calls for help, she sees Laura standing up and smiling. With a shard of a broken vase, Laura kills herself by slitting her throat. Rose later sees her manic patient, Carl, smiling and shouting that she's going to die. Okay, before this, they also introduced this character of Carl, who's this pretty run-of-the-mill frequent flyer in the psychiatric hospital that she also is using him to tell us that she's a good person.
Yeah, right? He's just a paranoid anxiety.
Yeah, he's harmless.
He's terrified that he's going to die at any point.
But this actually happens later. There's some stuff in between when she sees this girl kill herself and then when that happens. But basically, she sees this chick kill herself while doing a Kubrick stare and smiling. It's just so lazy. Rose calls for nurses to restrain him, only to see that he was asleep the whole time. Concerned for Rose's mental well-being, her supervisor, Dr. Morgan Desai, gives her a week off. That's Cal Penn, who I'm just going to be calling Cal Penn because that's the actor's name.
It's easier.
It's easier.
Yeah. Again, it's okay, so at this point, all we basically know about this woman is her mom's dead because we saw it in a dream, basically.
Yeah.
And then she's a therapist. She has this trauma, and before the trauma thing, she has this argument because he's like, I told you, you have to stop letting these people in without insurance.
Yeah.
And he's like, but they need the help. And he's like, where are we supposed to get the money? And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. And okay, so you also, we're also introduced to the fact that she has a current boyfriend who is very withholding or is just not a good actor because he's giving me nothing.
To be fair, no one's giving anything. So he's really just riding the baseline here of what's been expected of him. He basically is just like standard good guy, decent job.
Yeah. And then she also has this ex-boyfriend who's a cop who was, like, responding to the suicide initially, right?
Yeah.
And then
and
he like,
tries
comes
to, like, check on her.
Right. He
like,
comes up and he's like, how's it going?
I don't need you to check on me.
Right.
Interesting, too. I don't know that this means anything, but I do feel like sometimes this stuff is calculated. Interesting that her current boyfriend is black.
Yes.
And her ex-boyfriend is a white cop. And that she, spoiler alert, leaves her boyfriend for the cop.
Yeah. I also thought that was...
Isn't this her fiancé, too?
Yes, it's her fiancé, I believe.
They're engaged.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
I just, like, I don't know what that means. And I'm not making any comment on that. But I'm just saying...
It does seem calculated.
It seems calculated that... Also, when we're trying to portray her as such a good, sympathetic person and her fiancé's black...
Right. But then she has a white cop.
She's got a white cop boyfriend who ultimately...
Is the better character.
Is the love interest.
Right.
Yeah,
is the like, one that you're supposed to root for.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting as well. Also, she has a cat named Mustache, which we know is going to die because of all the screen time he gets.
Yeah, he's cute.
He's cute. But you get so much screen time of the cat and the cat food and the cat bowl.
He's the best actor.
Obviously.
Mustache is killing it.
In the following days, the hallucinations continue, making Rose seem unhinged and dangerous to people around her, including her fiancé, Trevor, and her sister, Holly.
Trevor, such a dumb name for a character. Stop naming your characters Trevor.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's just, like, keeps seeing shit and, like, people smiling at her and stuff like that. Just pretty basic horror.
Pretty basic. There's some decent jump scares this time.
I think that if... There are a lot of bad horror movies that have decent jump scares. Like, The Conjuring has very good jump scares, but, like, it is not a good movie.
No, I mean, this is, like, I mean, we've talked about this before, and it's like, sort of my stance, and I think your stance on horror, too, which is, like, there's kind of two camps of horror, which is, like, scary jump scare, no plot.
Instant gratification
horror. Instant gratification horror versus, like, scary because the plot... is disturbing.
Yeah.
And I guess there's also, like, gross-out horror, which is kind of
body
like
horror,
third
yeah.
category. And I'm a big fan of the plot-based horror.
Oh, yeah.
And the best plot-based horror will have a little bit of all of that. It'll have a few good jump scares, a few good, like, ooh, instant reaction horrors that really get you. But ultimately, if I don't leave the theater kind of scared to go to bed that night,
right.
I don't think that's a good horror movie.
Exactly.
If it doesn't, like, stick with me in my brain, like, and every time I look at a mirror, I'm like, what if my face moved right now? Then I don't think it's that good of a horror. And this is not a horror that's going to, like, stick with you.
Right.
It's a very instant gratification horror. And even then... I would rank it low.
Absolutely.
I think
Conjuring is better.
Is way better as far as instant gratification horror. I think it's a better monster movie.
Oh, absolutely. Better acting.
Better acting. Better plot.
Really?
And
more original also.
And that's saying something. Yeah. Because I don't think the plots of the Conjurings are quite good because they're mostly formulaic. Like, someone's got to be staying at home for some reason. So we got to have a writer or a stay-at-home mom.
Or a musician.
Or an artist. Any of those people... Now, I'm interested to see how they'll transition with the remote working environment that COVID has put.
Because you can have really anyone.
Any job can be remote. But I guess that's not really the point. The point is that they have some reason that they work from home.
Yeah.
The job is never important.
Exactly.
Sometimes artist jobs are important.
But often not.
Often not. That's not really the point. It's more of a plot device.
Okay, so this is like...
Much like this girl's job is also a plot device.
Oh my God, it's so annoying.
Because She has to be a therapist. She has to work in a psychiatric hospital. By the way, I forgot about this. We're told that she works like 80 hours a week.
That's impossible.
She like doesn't sleep. Like she'll just sleep, you know, at the hospital. Like she's a fucking Leonardo da Vinci, like, taking a 20-minute nap every 4 hours. And this is like supposed to be like, wow, what a good person.
She's actually doing that as very responsible as a therapist.
I know.
But like, extremely irresponsible. Which,
by the way, her boss says. But also, like,
yeah, it is irresponsible. You have to fucking sleep and take care of your shit.
But, like, of course, she has to be a therapist because people have to think, like,
what a martyr.
And people also have to think, like, she has to be surrounded by crazy people.
Right.
So that no one can tell if she's crazy or not.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And she has a harder time figuring it out herself.
So, coming up is, I think, probably the scariest part of the movie, which is very quickly dashed by some really shitty filmmaking, which I will bring up. So, her cat's missing, which is probably also the scariest part of the movie for me, because I'm like, oh my God.
Like, what if my cat
was missing?
That's a real life, tapping into my real life
fears. Yes. Everyone thinks she's crazy, and at her nephew's birthday party, Rose's gift had been replaced by her dead cat.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Horrifying the children. She sees a party attendant smiling at her and falls onto a glass table. And that ruined the entire scene for me. I was like, this isn't a fucking, like, Jack and Jill fucking movie. Like, it's not an Adam Sandler, like,
also just like
physical comedy bit.
What was the point? Like, that exact same thing could have been accomplished by her, like, knocking into a vase.
Yes!
Or
knocking over. Why does she have to fall all the way through this fucking glass coffee table? Like, it's a goddamn Marvel movie.
And then the way, like, nobody gives a shit. The way everyone's like, and?
Just completely ruined, like, the scariest part of the movie, which is them finding this dead cat.
And, like, the most, like, anticipation that there is in the whole movie is right. The little kid, like, unwrapping the box and there being a dead cat inside. Which, by the way, fucked up. For no reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
why would the thing do that?
To alienate her?
Crazy?
I guess. I don't know.
She doesn't really need any help doing that. The way she's not getting any sleep is helping her.
Ending the party in chaos, she visits her former therapist, Dr. Northcott, who suggests that her problems stem from her abusive and mentally ill mother, whose death from an overdose she witnessed as a child. So, yeah, that's putting it together that, like, the scene we saw in the first part was her mom dying and her finding her. Rose begins to suspect that she has been cursed by some sort of supernatural entity, but is unable to get Trevor to believe her.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Nobody would believe you. That's kind of the point.
Upon learning Laura's professor was grinning at her before his death, Rose visits his widow, Victoria, and learns he became increasingly unstable after witnessing a woman die by suicide several days prior to his death. Rose asks her ex-boyfriend Joel, a police detective, to go through police records. They find several cases where someone witnessed a suicide, then a few days later died by suicide in front of someone else who continued the pattern.
Which, how did he get these records? He's just a cop.
He's just a cop.
He's not working for the FBI. Like, how? I don't think cops just have access to all the police records in the world.
Yeah, it's unclear if this is all happening in the same place or not.
I'm pretty sure it's not.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, so it's basically It Follows.
This is when you go, this is It Follows.
They're just passing it from one person to another.
It uses trauma.
Oh, thanks for spoon feeding me the fucking movie. Oh my god.
It uses trauma to pass along, whereas before it was sexually transmitted, which makes a lot
more sense.
This is trauma-based.
Oh my god.
Well, damn, that's gonna be easy to pass.
Rose visits Holly and Holly's her sister, and attempts to explain the situation, but only further strains the relationship.
Yeah, fair. Because your sister's like, okay, I already thought you were fucking crazy.
And then you gave my son a dead cat.
And now I think you're super fucking crazy. Because you're trying to be like, no, I didn't. A demon entity thing that made me do it. You're like, what? Get out of my house.
The hallucinations continue to escalate in intensity. Joel calls her, revealing that he discovered all the witnesses died by suicide within a week. So, the ring.
The ring. Also, don't her and Holly get into a big argument because she's like, you were never around.
Right, you weren't there, and I had to find Mom.
And Holly was like, don't you know I feel bad about that every day? I wish you were fucking dead. Every day I wake up and I wish you were dead.
Turns into the marriage story. The exception was Robert Talley, who instead murdered someone else. Rose and Joel visit Robert in jail, where the latter claims the entity feeds on trauma.
In case you didn't already get that.
And the only way to escape it is to kill someone in front of a witness in a brutal enough fashion to cause major psychological trauma.
I think
passing the entity to them.
Murdering anyone in front of anyone
is just traumatic in and of itself.
Traumatic. I think living in the world is traumatic. I guess, like, no, you gotta inflict some fucking real harm.
I guess, but I don't know. Like, different people process trauma in different ways.
Also, like, you know, unlike It Follows, where it's like, if you break the chain, it'll start working backwards.
Right.
I guess just
which
no one
ups
ever,
the stakes.
I guess, no, that's not, because
that's not this movie.
Because what's scary about It Follows is, like, it could come for you anytime. Like, even if you can get passed on forever, but if it catches one person.
Yeah, it'll go
backwards. But then what happens when it gets to the number one?
I don't know.
Never answer.
Rose angrily rejects the option and leaves. She is confronted at home by the entity in Madeline's form. So her therapist comes and sees her, but then her therapist calls her in the middle of the conversation and she feels.
This is going to be one of the least scary things in the movie.
Yeah.
I hate when the monsters talk.
Oh my God.
I don't want to know what the monster's thoughts and feelings are.
Yeah.
That's not really the point of movies like this.
No. She's confronted, where it gleefully warns her that she's running out of time. Rose impulsively drives to her hospital.
What is the time limit?
A week because of the ring.
Okay, but like, not everyone dies within a week. She even says, like, some people it was 3 days, some people it was 5 days.
Yeah.
The longest is a week. So I always just assumed it's like It Follows where it catches up to you.
Right.
But then it's like, we're right here. This thing is sitting feet away from me, and it's just like, not yet.
Soon.
Not yet. And you're like, but when, bitch? Why? What's the determining factor? I guess because she's not in front of anyone at that point.
Right.
Who's she going to...
Right.
Who's she going to traumatize?
Yeah. Rose impulsively drives to her hospital with a knife and hallucinates murdering Carl in front of Morgan to pass the entity to him. When he suddenly begins to peel off his face, she snaps out of it and hastily drives away, though not before Morgan spots the knife and alerts the police.
So yeah, hey, I have an idea. Kill yourself.
Yeah.
I know how to stop it. Kill yourself.
Yeah.
You're going to do that anyway.
You're going to do it anyway.
Might as well do it on your own terms.
Then what happens? Is it gone? If you kill yourself before it makes you kill yourself?
That's what I'm wondering. No, this is never even explored as an option.
So what if she were to try to kill herself when there was no one around? Right?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Nothing. So
would it just stop?
I feel like yes. I feel like we've been led to believe, how's it going to go backwards? All of its victims are dead.
Right.
It can't go back.
Yeah, it's not like It Follows.
It's not like It Follows. It's not like where you're still alive. It's like...
So yeah, if she just was like preemptively kill herself.
Yeah, if she was just like, I don't think so. Boom.
I'm going to die anyway. So then it would just end.
Yeah, it seems really selfish to not just kill yourself.
Seems really selfish to, like, not just kill yourself. Isolate that audio.
That was like the first thing I thought. I was like, I know how to stop it. Forever, for everyone.
Rose drives to her abandoned family home, convinced that she can't pass on the entity if she remains alone. Rose confronts the entity in the form of her mother, where it is revealed that as a child, Rose had fearfully ignored her pleas for help after she overdosed and accidentally left her to die.
That is kind of crazy. That was kind of a crazy twist.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that Rose actually is the one who, like, killed her mom.
Yeah. And then she, like, says that, like, my mom was a monster and I didn't want to save her. Because she was abusive.
Yeah, she says, like, basically on purpose. I knew what was happening and I did not call the
cops. Yeah, because she was a bad mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was wild.
I was like, what?
Wish it had been done better.
Wish it had mattered more. It, in the end, really wasn't important to the plot at all.
The entity attacks Rose, but she manages to set it on fire, destroy the entity, and flee the burning house. Then she drives to Joel's apartment, where he confronts her, comforts her. When Joel starts smiling, Rose realizes everything that happened from the moment she entered her old house was a hallucination.
Stupid.
Stupid! Cop out!
Stupid fake out.
As the real Joel pulls up, having tracked Rose's phone, Rose believes that he is either the entity or its next victim and runs screaming into the house and shuts the door, locking Joel out and locking herself in with the entity.
Oh, I thought she ran in there because she didn't want to kill herself in front of Joel and she realized that this was all part of the plan.
I don't know.
I thought she saw Joel and was like, fuck, no, he found me. I gotta lock myself inside so he doesn't...
That could be the case. The entity approaches the now despairing Rose and immediately rips off its own skin to reveal its true form, a towering skinless humanoid with multiple sets of teeth and gums nested within an enormous smiling mouth.
Boring. Slenderman did it a million times.
Oh, it's been done.
Slenderman is literally scarier than this entity.
Ugh.
Oh, tall humanoid creature? Jeez.
She's so scary.
I wonder where they got that from.
Rose is subsequently paralyzed after seeing it, allowing the entity to force itself inside her body through her mouth. Joel breaks down the front door only to see a smiling Rose setting herself on fire, passing the entity on to him. A-cab.
And he should kill himself, because obviously this is the way to stop it.
Why these people aren't just going ahead and killing themselves anyway to stop it?
Why literally not one single person has figured out that this is the way is beyond me. This is a dumb movie.
Yes, it is. It has an 80% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's so angering.
Yes.
This movie is not good.
No, it's also really upsetting because I just watched this other movie that I kind of wanted to do called The Wonder, which is a better movie, but it has an 87% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I'm like, how?
This movie is just like, it's just, anything that's good from it was stolen.
Yes. The shots that were in it just made were worse. From The Shining.
And
yes.
Just made worse. Like, they just took other ideas from other people and made them worse. And then, like, the acting is not good. Character development's horrible. Every single thing is just spoon-fed to you, like, here's the message, here's the scary part, here's the good part.
Yes.
And
it sounds like trauma.
They create so many stakes that just don't pay off at all. Like, why do you need to know that Rose's mom, like, that Rose is the reason her mom died? Like, you really don't. It doesn't come
in. What does that add to the story other than just giving us, I guess, more background information on her?
You think that it's like, oh, the way to defeat it's going to be like to confront your trauma.
Right.
And that would make sense kind of in the context of the movie, considering like she's a therapist.
Right. Metaphorically, it would make a lot of sense.
But then it's just like, nah, that ain't it. Actually, no. That doesn't fix it. Whoops.
Whoops.
And it was all a dream.
I hate that. Oh, my God.
The only time that's ever worked is in Twilight. Breaking Dawn.
Part 2. The best one.
That's the only time that dream sequence ever made the plot better. Because it made sense within the context of the story, what with Alice having future vision. Mm-hmm. And it gave us catharsis. This didn't give me catharsis at all. This pissed me off.
Yeah. It is frustrating. Oh my God. They have their own, like, website, too.
Yeah. Honestly, did all the money for this movie go into the viral marketing campaigns?
I would fucking imagine, because the marketing campaigns were so big, like, when they would show up at, like, places and do the smile.
Oh my God.
So annoying. Ugh. I mean, yeah, I don't know. All the Collider and Vulture were all like, oh, it's pretty scary. And I'm like, it's not, though. Like, it has a couple of good jump scares, but, like,
I feel like
jump scares do not a great movie make.
It Follows did not get nearly the, like, praise that this got. And this is literally just It Follows.
Also, It Follows is way better made. Like, the cinematography is
way prettier.
Yeah, it's like, and also, that's like an indie film. And it's still, like, way better. And the acting's better.
Yeah, every part of it's better.
Yes.
Well, but they had to spend all their money getting Kevin Bacon's untalented daughter.
Maybe you could just find an unknown actress and then pay her less.
No. I owe a favor to Kevin Bacon. I'm trying to repay that. Clearly. It's like the director's goddaughter or some shit, probably.
Right.
This is just like not... What else has this director done? Anything?
Let me look.
It's just boring. It's just...
Tucker Finn.
That's what I'm saying, like... Sometimes I think we're in the horror renaissance, and then other times I see this, and it's got an 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I think, maybe we haven't learned anything since 2000.
He did a short film, Laura Hasn't Slept. He did another short film, The Hide Behind. This is his first full-length picture.
Not good.
And he started in 2018 with his short films.
I should just make short films.
Guys, you know, we were thinking about this beforehand. We're like... We should just make a horror movie, because, like...
Why not?
Why not?
It doesn't seem that hard.
I mean, the bar seems very low.
The Blair Witch Project was made for, like, $10.
And it's, like, still one of the most enduring horror movies of all time.
Because the point of horror is it doesn't have to be high budget. Life is scary.
Yeah.
You just have... I think, like, here's the thing that I think a lot of people... I think if you're going to dive into horror, like, this is what I think... And I've heard Stephen King talk about this. I've heard a lot of, like, some of the best horror... writers ever. Mm-hmm. They talk about what is the thing that is the scary thing. Monster can't just be a monster, right? The monster has to, what makes monsters scary is connecting to some real life fear that you have. And a lot of things are scary. Like, so you can't, the monster can't just be, oh, it's scary because tall creature monster's scary.
Right.
Dying scary. It's gotta be bigger than that. It's gotta be like, I guess this movie is trying to be like trauma is scary.
Yeah, but also they don't seem to follow through on that metaphor.
But then it contradicts its own message because it basically is like, no, you can't overcome trauma. If we're looking at trauma as the metaphor for the monster,
better kill yourself. That's what this message is.
Because this is, like, basically comes down to like, no, you can't solve it. Actually, this woman, a trained mental health professional who works with some of the most extreme cases of mental illness,
ER
crisis mental illness, known to be like a great therapist, confronts all her trauma. No, not enough.
She's still gonna die.
So I guess trauma isn't the monster because you can't get over it ever. And I think there are ways to like still have a scary ending where you follow through with that metaphor. But the thing is, I think they were going for monster scary.
Right, exactly.
And like the STD metaphor, or like STDs are scary. What if an STD literally
jumped from person to person
and killed you?
Yeah.
Like, and if you didn't do it, if you did not pass along, it would kill you. That's kind of a scary thought.
Right.
Like, these are things that are scary. Hereditary. The monster is grief.
Grief. Yeah.
That's...
What if your daughter dies in this horrible way and it's kind of your son's fault?
And, like, you think about, like, Rosemary's Baby. Being pregnant, going through, being a woman.
Being a woman in 1960s.
Being a woman in the 1960s and pregnancy being like a metaphor for a time when you have, when you should have like the most bodily autonomy and you have like the least.
Right.
That's terrifying. Like, that's a great metaphor for what it is to like be a woman without autonomy.
Yes.
Stepford Wives. I mean, there's like a million things you can go back to, like, what's the real monster? The real monster is some like societal thing.
Exactly.
And we're physicalizing the societal fear.
Absolutely.
And that's what's scary. And that's what's enduring. But if you're just like, ooh, scary ghost monster.
Ooh, scary ghost monster, humanoid, tall.
This is like The Conjuring, though. Like, all the Conjuring movies, it's like, what is the ghost? The ghost is just the ghost.
It's a ghost.
Like,
it's
the
devil.
It's the devil. That's scary. And you're like, I guess, like, I don't believe in the devil.
Right, so it's not
hard
really
for
that
me to
scary.
Be actually scared of him because I don't believe he exists.
Right.
I believe, like, more in, like, manifestations of.
Like in Hereditary, Payman is the devil, but he's scary because it is a manifestation of these horrible life circumstances that have been going on.
Well, and Payman's the explanation for the horrible life circumstances. He himself, like, Payman's not scary. Payman doesn't do shit.
Yeah.
What's scary is
what these people are doing with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Payman just chills.
Payman just wants to eat chocolate.
Payman's just chilling and ripping heads off birds. And that's like...
I just want to eat my chocolate, rip my head off my bird.
And
I'm happy.
Leave me alone. Payman doesn't even know he's Payman. So, like, there's just a lot of stuff like that. And I think that's what a lot of, like, horror misses.
Mm-hmm.
Is, like, what's the... What am I actually supposed to be scared of here?
Right. Definitely. Wow. This movie, not good.
No, no. And
Nepo baby casting.
Nepo baby casting. An example of when it's bad to have nepotism.
Yeah, movie. Because Kevin Bacon's a great actor and his daughter is not.
I'm interested in watching the Laura Sleep Doesn't Sleep.
Short film Laura Doesn't Sleep.
Which is clearly like what this is based right. on.
But it's not Kevin Bacon's daughter.
No, it's probably some film student. Some acting student.
Some acting, poor acting student.
He's probably better. He's probably like, please? And he was like, no, sorry.
I need that bacon money.
I don't know. I guess you just make a script, you send it out, and they say yes or no.
I guess.
I don't know. I think, I want to see more. It's just like, can you imagine making like a drama or a thriller where you didn't think out?
Right, like why these things are happening, yeah. And what is this saying about the larger story?
But I don't know, I guess lots of movies are made like that. But I think every movie should have a, you know, it's like a book. Like right. You want a book to have a theme, and you want that theme to be, whatever your message is, you should drive towards that. Mm-hmm. And not do things that are directly counterproductive to your message. Or at least you should have a message. Like, this is me ascribing a message to Smile.
IDK, kill yourself, ? That's the message.
I don't know what the message is. The message is, like, trauma is easily spread. Or, like, trauma... I don't know what the message is.
I don't know!
Something about trauma in there, I think.
But also trauma is a humanoid creature with teeth?
And also, you can't get over it. The only way to escape trauma is by spreading trauma.
That's by just, traumatizing other people.
You're like, are you an abusive dad? Or like, what? The only way I can escape my trauma
is by traumatizing others.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I get the message of like trauma begets trauma.
Right. But that does not seem what this movie is.
But then it's like, okay, but then... That we know in the first 5 minutes.
Exactly.
So, like, what is the solution?
The elaboration is just not, like, adding to the
there
understanding.
Is none, yeah. There is none. The whole message is trauma begets trauma, and it's an endless cycle that can never be broken.
And no matter what you do, it's all just going to end in death.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how good you are. It doesn't matter if you're the best 80-hour-a-week psychiatrist in the ER with a black fiancé. You aren't gonna be getting better.
Doesn't matter.
Because ultimately you did a bad thing when you were 7 years old.
And you should be punished for it.
And you should be punished for it. I know we've grown to love you and we killed your cat and that was bad.
That was really bad. But like you do deserve to die because you had your mom die.
And that is your fault. You were 7 years old. And it was definitely your fault that your mom died.
You basically murdered your mom.
Yeah.
So, like...
And everyone thinks that. And it's definitely your fault, and no one would ever give you the benefit of the doubt because you were 7. And your mom was abusing you. Yeah. They really don't also delve into that very much.
No.
Like, they don't really, like, look into
it's more just like a twist.
They don't really, like, delve into, like, the moral ambiguity of, like, is it her fault?
Right. No, they just like, ooh, she killed her mom.
And you're like, oh, I guess now it's okay.
I guess, but like, it seems more complicated than that also.
It's a lot more complicated. See, that's almost to me, like, that's the scariest part of the movie.
Yeah.
To me, the idea of like a 7-year-old letting her mom die, that's horrifying.
Yeah, because the mom was so terrible to her.
Because that's a real situation. Like, what do you do? Like, everyone in that's bad.
Yeah.
That's an interesting dilemma. That I won't be exploring anymore.
We're not going to talk about that.
We don't have time to talk about that.
We have an hour and 55 minutes. We're not going to talk about that.
We do. We got to get to Scary Monster. We got to dream. We got to fake you out dream-wise.
So oh my God, so many fake outs.
So many. I hate fake outs.
One is fine. Come three?
On. Three. Is this the Lord of the Rings? Is this the end of the Lord of the Rings? How many endings are we going to have?
So true.
And also, the worst one ends up being the ending.
Yeah.
Which horror movies do that all the time, where they're just like, oh, you thought it was defeated. Nah.
Nah.
Gotta leave room for a sequel.
Smile too, smilier.
The bye-bye man.
Get Jonathan Penner up in here to write Smile 2.
Smilier. say cheese and die. Goosebumps already did this. I'm confused. I'm just saying, when a Goosebumps episode is more horrifying than your movie.
Yeah. That's why no one's dared to make a ventriloquist dummy horror movie, because they know that it's already been done.
Goosebumps did it. Goosebumps, quite frankly, perfected it.
Yes.
And there's already three of those.
It doesn't need to be redone.
I would love to see a full-length slappy.
Me too. Movie.
Like, I think that'd be really good.
Yeah.
Like, for adults.
Yes.
That'd be good.
I'd love it.
That's just Chucky, though.
Yeah. Aw. Bride of Chucky's so fun. I love that movie.
Chucky's great.
It's hilarious.
You stare camp unflinchingly in the face when you watch Chucky. Child's Play.
It's hilarious.
I just think, I don't know, if R.L. Stine is, like, besting you in every conceivable way.
Maybe take a look at what you're doing.
Maybe take a look at what you're doing. Should you have called R.L. Stine to come?
Instead of calling Kevin Bacon, you should have been calling R.L. Stine.
You should have been tapping into some horror resources here, because this is weak. And if I was the creator of It Follows, I'd be pissed.
I would be pissed, too. So you basically took my really nuanced view of, like,
Sex,
and you turned it into a suicide movie.
Which is dumb and doesn't follow the point of
it. It doesn't make any sense!
And also, okay, the other thing too is, like, kind of it's scary about It Follows is that there is zero explanation.
Right.
There is no explanation as to how this started, what it's doing, how you stop it. Which is part
of what's scary about life.
Yeah, well, and it's like, as with STDs, there's not a way to necessarily stop it. We don't know how
a lot of them stop.
We haven't figured that out. And so there's a lot of just, like, fear around that. And this movie dives into the monster too much, I feel, to not give resolution.
Right.
In a way. And, like, to give us a fake-out resolution is worse.
Yes.
It almost would have been better, I think, for her to actually resolve it, but then for us to see how the monster, like, crops back up or something.
Yes.
Like,
but it just ends with her.
It just ends with her killing herself, and you're just like, oh, and the cycle continues.
To the cop.
It would have been more interesting if, like, she had escaped it, but now it's going to start all over in some other place, and here's how it starts or whatever. Because if it's, like, born of trauma or something, then it's sort of like, well, this monster's never going to be gotten rid of, because trauma is never going to be gotten rid of.
Like, right, it's always going to be there.
Yeah, being alive.
As long as humans exist.
There will be trauma. And so that's an interesting comment on trauma, which is like, you have the ability to overcome it, but it's not easy, and it's going to, and most people won't be able to.
Right, and trauma's not just going to end.
And there is no way to kill this monster definitively, because there's always going to be trauma, and someday someone's trauma is going to be bad enough, it's going to bear this monster again. Right. So there's this, like, endless sort of cycle. See, we've been talking about this movie for 40 minutes, and I've already come up with a better idea.
See, they should just let us in the writer's room.
See, if people for more than 2 fucking seconds talked about their script.
They talked through the logistics of their script.
It's not even just that. It's like, imagine you're in a college course and you're analyzing a book. Now, think about how did the choices that we're making serve what we're trying to do? But to do that, you have to have a clear mission statement. And I feel like there is no mission statement here other than be scary.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's,
ooh, smile, scary.
And ultimately, if you're going to try to, like, be scary, then the obvious be scary ending is, oh, it didn't work, and it's still going, and it's not going to stop. And it's like, yeah, I guess that's the obvious be scary ending, but you can still have a scary ending that serves your plot.
And how does that work with your metaphor? It doesn't.
Because there is no metaphor. Like, we're ascribing the metaphor to this movie. We're mining this metaphor. But, like, the fact is nothing in this movie really serves that, other than the very bare basic
point. Whenever they're saying, ooh, trauma is why it's happening, that's, like, just them trying to come up with this reasoning.
To be honest, it just sounds like a white guy that's, like, trying to be woke and is like, you know what's really scary? Trauma.
Trying to get laid.
Trauma.
He went on one date with a psychology major. Exactly. And now he's like, you know what's really scary? My deepest, darkest fear? Trauma.
And so he wrote this movie, and you're like, but you're missing the point. And then, like, nothing else follows that. Like, it doesn't feel like her being a therapist, which could, in my opinion, really come in handy for what the movie is.
Right.
It doesn't come in handy at all.
No.
She doesn't help anyone. She doesn't help herself. She doesn't do anything.
She doesn't seem to be using any of her skills.
At all. At all. None of her skills come in handy for her at all.
No.
So it's like, why is she a therapist? Because she needs to be around crazy people, I guess.
Yeah. Like, and to show that she's a good person.
Yeah, I mean, it works two ways. To give us, she's a good person, so automatically you should like her, even though I hate this when movies do this. Movies need to have funny.
Oh my god, that is the immediate way to ingratiate yourself with someone.
Movies must have funny. People must be funny.
Or because people
don't care about
them. Because people are funny. People in are real life.
Yeah, or either they need to be funny or they need to have some sort of genuine caring moments that we see. This whole just, like, forced upon, look at what a moral person this is
thing. Yeah, I work 80 hours a week and I don't like insurance.
That is not helping. That doesn't make us like your character. And I see movies miss this all the time. Take 20 minutes out of your film, the first 20 minutes, mm-hmm. when you're doing character building stuff, and give us some moments of humor. Give us a little bit of play around with her fiance.
Right.
Flesh out some of these relationships.
Yes. Like, why are these people together in the first place?
Let us see a little bit of that tension between her and her sister. When you just, like, when there's no buildup and then it's like, well, hello, it's me, your sister.
Where we have a contentious relationship.
And it's like, okay, thanks for, hey, why show us when you can tell us?
Right.
It's not. That's what movies are for.
It's a visual medium.
If I wanted to go see a book, I'd go read a book. I think about this all the time. I think movies often forget that they're movies.
Right.
Like, when they're writing the script
they're forgetting that it's going to be on the screen. You can show them things.
Yeah, you don't have to put the words in, because you can just do them with no dialogue. I mean, and I think about this too, like, with comedy movies a lot, how sometimes comedy movies, they miss opportunities for gags using camera gags.
Right.
And they just do all, it's just like running stand-up joke comedy in mm-hmm. a movie, versus you think of something like, I'm going to use like Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Right.
Which has a lot of visual gags, or Shaun of the Dead or something like
yes.
that. Yes. Just all these visual gags where it's like using, Scott Pilgrim versus the World couldn't be translated to the stage or something.
Right.
Because there's too many gags in it that are specific to being a movie. Its best form is in the movie.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, I guess, or the graphic novel. But, like, but like that's easy, too, because that's drawing.
Right.
It's like you can, like, when you're making a movie, I always think you should think, like, why not just make this a podcast?
Right, exactly.
Like, why not just an audio drama?
What is the utility of making this a movie?
Mm-hmm. Because movies are expensive.
Yeah.
They're hard to make. They take a lot of time. Why not make this an audio drama? Why not make Smile an audio drama? I actually think it might work largely better as an audio drama.
Right.
Think about, why is this going to work best in the film medium, and how do we use the film medium mm-hmm. to enhance the fear? And I think, like, every part of this doesn't do that. The monster is not scary mm-mm. in the film medium. And I often think showing the monster is not scary.
It does a huge disservice, I think, to most horror movies showing the monster.
Yeah, very, very few times. Even just having a sort of shadowy, large creature mm-hmm. would have been scarier.
Right. I mean, not seeing the thing is scarier than seeing the thing.
Yeah, because
almost every time.
You can't come up with something that's scarier than what I can come up with in my brain.
Right.
You can't. It's not possible. Now, unless you go the opposite way, which is like, I'm going to use like It, for example.
Right.
Now, scrap what I'm about to say for anything that ends up happening in It, where he becomes like the giant spider monster light ball.
So any of the, like...
The basic clown thing is scary.
Right.
To me, Pennywise is far scarier in clown form than he is in
any
ethereal
other
being light form.
Yeah. He changes into whatever you're the most scared of.
Right. And I think that, I just think it's the idea that, like, something really simple can be scary. The people smiling in this movie is scarier than the monster.
Yes.
Because someone doing a semi-creepy smile is scary. Someone, like some weird creature CGI thing that's really not real and doesn't look anything like reality.
Yeah. Not scary.
Not scary. Exactly. I don't know how we didn't come up with these things. I don't know how nobody is. You know, I don't know.
I don't know.
People have been saying it, and yet nobody applies it.
Yeah. They need to get after it.
I know. We should make films.
I think so. Do you have a review for me?
Oh, yeah.
I guess what would you give this movie first?
Oh, my God. A one. This is not a good movie.
I'll give it a one.
It's not good. It's not good. I don't like it at all. Anything I would like about it, I liked better in the movie that they stole it from.
Right? That's always the issue whenever you take things from other people. It's like, well, they did it better.
So. Yeah, it's like, you didn't improve upon anything. You just made everything worse. The stuff that was good about your movie is just taken from other things, so yeah. I can't even give you the points. Okay. I want to say that a lot of these reviews were really negative, and nearly all of them said the stuff that we said.
Yeah.
This one is pretty concise, and I like it. This is called 1 out of 10, awful, too long, and fake outs over the moon. This movie could have been an email. Either of its fake out endings could have been the ending, and it would have been so much better and less of a waste of my time.
Mm-hmm.
The creature design right up until the end sucked. It's the goofiest, unintentionally hilarious thing I have ever seen, and people in the audience were literally laughing when it was on the screen. If you have ever seen, if you've never seen a movie or a video in your entire life, you might enjoy it.
Brutal.
If you enjoy white women screaming their lungs out for 2 hours, I would recommend any season of American Horror Story with Sarah Paulson in the cast instead of this movie.
They really just called her out as like a lesser man's Sarah Paulson.
Awful. Don't give your time to this and don't watch its inevitable sequel because it probably did make some money.
He made a shit ton of money.
I wonder if it'll be a sequel.
I imagine so. Made $218 million.
I don't know. Sometimes you think, like, movies like this, they just don't have staying power.
Right.
Which is why I don't think they get sequels. Like, The Conjuring has, I have to admit, has some staying power.
Listen, they have some really good, they're very capitalist over there at The Conjuring. They're like, we're just gonna make.
And, like, I'll give it to him. The Insidious is not that bad of a movie.
It's really not. I think that 3/4 of the Insidious movie is good. I do not like the end, but
it's not that bad, and I like.
And when you have Patrick Wilson also.
He's gonna do good.
He's gonna do a good job.
And I don't think the first Conjuring movie is. I don't think any of them are good, but I don't think they're horrible.
And they have some jump scares.
And they're good jump scares. And again, like, their monsters are always very, like, overly theatrical,
right,
painted face monsters, which they do with practical effects,
mm-hmm,
which you just think reads a lot better.
It does.
I just think
same with Insidious. Yeah, like, everything is very practical.
Practical effects read better on monsters for me.
Mm-hmm.
Even, like, you think about, I mean, he's like Guillermo del Toro.
Right.
He's like the king of
practical effects.
Practical monster making, right, especially. Which is like, his monsters are, he shows the monsters almost every time.
But they're so delicately scary, made.
But because they look grounded in reality because they are grounded in reality.
Right. It's literally Doug Jones in like makeup.
Yeah. And like that, they know how to. There is a way, I think, to show the monster and for it to be scary, and it's nearly always with practical effects.
Absolutely.
I just don't think we are at a technological point where we can make scary horror monsters in CGI that are meant to look humanoid.
I agree.
We can make, you know, the alien in Nope.
Right.
Because that doesn't look like...
It doesn't need to be grounded in reality.
It doesn't look like anything.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah, it doesn't look like anything. It's fine. I'm not comparing that to anything. It looks like an amorphous blob. It's not meant to be scary because of its way it looks.
Of the way it looks, it's supposed to be scary because of what it's doing.
Yeah, and like, but like Pennywise is scary because like Bill Skarsgård can do that thing with his eyes.
Yeah, right.
And like, he's got a big forehead.
And we all know that he's a clown because Stephen King was like, oh, wow, John Wayne Gacy killed, like, the 31 boys.
And that was scary.
And that was scary when he killed those 30
boys. I didn't like that at all. And nobody did.
Nobody did.
So, I mean, that's, like, isn't that weird that, like, all of clowning got ruined by John Wayne Gacy. Yeah. All of clowning. Like, before that, people weren't afraid of clowns.
And now it was like, yeah, just... And it wasn't even like he killed people while he was a clown, either. No. He just was a clown.
He just was separately in his life a clown.
He was a child murderer, and separately, he was a clown.
And it's weird. That's weird. Because, you know, it's not like... Like, Ed Gein didn't ruin anything.
Right. I guess small town farmers.
But nobody...
Mama's boys.
Well, that's always been weird, I think. And, I mean, Oedipus Rex, baby. That's right. Sort of ancient Greek. People thought that was weird. But, like, nobody ever... Nobody's like, nah, I don't trust farmers.
Right? Because of Ed Gein.
Yeah. I guess because there's enough of them.
I guess.
I'm trying to think of other things that got ruined by... Not really many things. No, certainly no.
Dean Corll ended candy making because he was the killer who like would lure kids to vans with candy.
Ah, okay.
So candy vans got ruined.
Were candy vans a huge thing
before? I am assuming so.
Because ice cream trucks still exist.
Right. Well, I think just anything about like if there's a stranger in a van selling candy or a strange guy giving out candy was pretty much ruined by Dean Corll.
I'm gonna be honest though. I can't imagine, and I know it wasn't around, but I can't imagine a time in which someone was innocently giving out can from a vandy. What am I doing? Can from a van? What the fuck? Candy from a van.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that they were all, like, upstanding members of society.
I'm just saying, I think if I was a parent in any day, I would, I mean, then again, I don't know, latchkey kids, you were like, fucking go. I don't
go,
care
be home by dark.
I don't care where you are. Just don't be here.
Do not be in my sight.
So I guess that's the difference. You know, clowns, any magician killers?
Not that I can think of. I know that John Wayne Gacy would do the rope trick.
Now, let me tell you this. I would like to make a horror movie about magicians because, I'm going to be honest, I don't trust magicians for shit.
Oh, no, actually, have you seen Terror Train?
No.
That's a movie in which the killer is a magician.
I think that that's a good plot twist because...
That's a Jamie Lee Curtis
movie
from the 80s.
Just to be honest, I don't trust magicians.
Right.
I watch David Blaine. I don't trust him. Don't put me in a room with him. I don't want to see it. I went to a Renaissance festival and some guy did some up close magic with card tricks and I was like,
don't fucking trust you.
Don't trust you at all. Don't trust you at all. I don't, that's creepy to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have an untapped market here.
Yeah. Nobody's making magician. Now, I guess it's because there's never been a magician serial killer.
Well, we wouldn't know, though, because
he... magic. He magics the bodies away.
See, we wouldn't know, though, because of his illusions.
Exactly. He tricks in a horde for money. Let's get Will Arnett.
Yes. Anytime I think of, like, John Wayne Gacy, though, I think of, like, Dee. And when she's like, John Wayne Gacy, killer clown, he did excellent work.
Yeah. Clowning's good. I don't know. I mean... I trust clowns more than I trust magicians.
Yeah!
Clowns aren't tricking you.
Yeah.
They're scary with their face and all, but, like, magicians do that shit, too.
Magicians are doing it, like, but in a bolder way where they don't have their faces covered in makeup.
Yeah. We could do, but what if you were, like, a magician who did? That'd be scary.
That'd be wild. Wow. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope that if you did watch this movie...
Sorry,
but I hope you didn't watch this movie and you just listened to this episode so that you had the best experience possible.
You didn't have to watch it. You're welcome.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.